Taking Stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.
This is Vincent Wall with you on News Talk's Taking Stock. We're joined now by Miguel Delaney, Chief Football Writer with The Independent in the UK. Miguel, you're very welcome and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Vincent.
Now, we've seen this week, Miguel, the first round matches for the next World Cup to be held in Qatar at the end of next year. And the focus on this side of the water, obviously on Ireland's performances in the opening matches. But has the whole concern about the venue, Qatar, how they won that the right to hold it there, and the conditions of many hundreds of thousands of people who work in that country, has that all basically all gone away? We're just focused on the football now?
I mean, I have to say, it does feel like now that the road to Qatar properly starts with the beginning of the European qualifiers, it does feel like there should be a bit more discussion about what exactly is happening here and the tournaments we're going to. Because, I mean, obviously, there's been so much on Qatar since they won it. And maybe that's kind of made people a little jaded of the subject. But also, for the last decade, it's been a little bit abstract because it's some tournament in the future. But now that we're on the road to it, and now there's the possibility of playing in a country and playing in a tournament that has so many questions around it, I would have thought there'd be a few more questions, say, to players or managers this week. But there's been a lot of silence. And as you mentioned there about the issue with migrant worker rights, I mean, it really does go beyond that. We are talking about what is possibly the most politically problematic World Cup in history. And that's pretty remarkable when you consider that it's been talked in those terms, when you consider we've had 1978 with the Argentinian junta, or 1934 with a Mussolini-staged Italian World Cup. But almost every element of this World Cup is problematic. That's from the motivation for it. I mean, sports washing has become a big word in football recently because of the way, say, Abu Dhabi have bought Manchester City, or Qatar again have bought Paris Saint-Germain, which is essentially using sport to soften the image of states or emirates with problematic human rights records. And you couldn't have a more elementary case of sports washing than Qatar hosting the World Cup to go with their ownership of Paris Saint-Germain. Second to that, then, there's the actual winning of the tournament. In April of last year, the US Department of Justice, for the first time, basically made clear accusations of bribes towards FIFA ex-co officials surrounding that 2018-2022 vote. Now, I suppose it should be stressed that Qatar strenuously deny that, but questions persist. And then, of course, you've got the very nature of the tournament. I mean, I've even been thinking about this from a media perspective. I mean, I'll likely be going to Qatar next year to cover it. And yet we'll possibly be staying in hotels or going around in hotels or metros that have been built under worker conditions that have been described in a UN report last year. I'm just going to read this out because I think it's important. Basically indentured or coercive labour conditions that recall the historic reliance on enslaved and coerced labour in the region. And added to that, the report described how Western and Arab nationalities, quote, systematically enjoy greater human rights protections than South Asian and sub-Saharan African nationalities, a situation that raises serious concerns of structural racial discrimination against non-nationals in Qatar. I mean, we really are talking about the most serious political issues here. And all the more, I mean, this would obviously be a huge issue anyway, but given the racial inequality that I just pointed, it feels all the more prominent in a football world that has become newly politicised in the last year with the whole context of taking the knee. And I should stress here, when I say that, it shouldn't be seen as some sort of attempt to point out the hypocrisy of players taking the knee or anything like that. Really, because I think that's absolutely laudable and something that should continue. But really, this is an obvious follow-on from that, that if we're talking about racial equality, you couldn't have a more basic example of what's happening in Qatar right now from as independent a source and as an authoritative a source as a UN report. So it is the obvious next issue. And yeah, the silence this week has been remarkable. I'm not sure if Stephen Kenny was asked about it. Southgate was asked one question in the last week that I asked him last Thursday. He did give a good answer, but a very political answer. It's come up in a few press conferences. Like, I think Jeannie Wijnaldum was asked about it ahead of Holland's game yesterday, and he got a little bit testy about it. And then, of course, there's been the Norwegian example, which is the only place where it feels like this is generating any sort of prominent debate.
Remind us of the protest that has emanated from Norway before and during their match this week.
So, yeah, so the player, before the game, the players wore T-shirts, basically protesting the need to concentrate on human rights with specific reference to Qatar. And that actually stems from, and I suppose this shows the kind of power of these things as well, it stems from a movement among the Norwegian clubs, specifically Tromso, a small club in the north of Norway. It was, spearheaded by their former player, Tom Hogley, who has about 49 caps for Norway. And from there, it just developed where more and more clubs got into it. To be fair, Norway's been quite ahead of the game in this because their football magazine, Jossimar, has done an awful lot of work on migrant worker rights and the whole situation in Qatar related to this World Cup. So I suppose it's quite an educated football following as regards what's happening in Qatar in Norway. But it's led to the only country so far where the idea of a boycott is on the agenda. And now, a boycott itself is probably a complicated issue because, as was put to me this week, you're talking about, first of all, Southgate himself said, he said, the players don't choose where to play. And that is true. And if you're someone who, part of the political power of a World Cup is its unique prestige. And if you're someone who has that one single chance to play in a World Cup and it happens to fall on one as problematic as Qatar, it does show some of the issues of boycott and the unfairness of players. But that's the kind of the insidiousness of sports washing in this regard, and also how the players are being used, because they're directly being used to as part of sports washing. But it doesn't necessarily have to go as far as a boycott. I mean, I've done a lot of work in this, and even when you talk to people from the Human Rights Watch, one of their arguments is always basically that with situations like this, it's not necessarily about boycotting. It's also about political leverage and pulling levers to try and force change. And I think that's one of the most remarkable things about this situation. That, I mean, one of the defenses you hear about why it might be in some way a positive thing that a World Cup happens in Qatar is that it forces change. Yet, bar cosmetic alteration, and they were specifically criticised for not implementing change, we've seen none of that. And FIFA has a huge power here. I mean, whatever about the players who are in an unfortunate situation themselves, but FIFA and the federations have a huge opportunity here. They can really flex their muscle because of what the World Cup means. And that isn't being done. I mean, I was told this week, I led my piece in it for The Independent, about how the human rights group Fair Square wrote a letter to FIFA President Gianni Infantino about this UN report last year. They got a cursory email back, and there was nothing followed up. And it's like FIFA almost, despite all the usual kind of PR guff about a catalyst for change and a force for good, it seems like they want to wash their hands of actually using this World Cup as any sort of leverage for positive transformation in Qatar. And this is what, so even if a boycott feels too extreme, it does feel like the game, and particularly the federations, can do more here to have some positive influence in Qatar. And of course, thrown into all this is the fact that Ireland are going to be playing Qatar in this kind of bizarre game because they're sort of part of the qualifying group where the 16 minute, and they'll just play a series of friendlies as a warm up for 2022.
If it's not particularly fair on individual players or indeed on managers, Miguel, do you think there's any chance that federations like the FAI or the FA or other European administrations might follow the example of Norway, at least threaten a boycott or say, change now that the competition is underway or we're not going?
Well, I mean, if it's not part of the discussion, they won't. I mean, so I imagine in these situations, most people in football and most federations, they don't want to have to put up with these dilemmas that are becoming more and more common because of the political power of the game. And they'd rather just, it comes to us, and that has to come with pressure. But I do wonder if this starts to grow, whether that will change. I mean, it's funny, just from the fallout of some of this piece, like I'm from talking to a few people involved, one of the lines that was put to me was that Qatar 2022 are basically petrified if someone like Marcus Rashford, given all his political influence recently, starts up talk of a boycott. And this is the thing about it. And while it is unfair on players to expect the pressure, or sorry, to expect them to have an opinion on it or to kind of, you know, have some effect in their career in that way, the reality is they also have a lot of power. I mean, the blunt truth of the situation is if a core of international stars decided they had a problem with Qatar, then change would happen quick enough. FIFA would act quick enough.
You've reminded us this week of the importance of this topic, and do you think the media generally has a big role now over the coming months to try and affect change, to either putting pressure on politicians or on national associations to say, look, we want the competition to go ahead, but we won't go unless we see absolute tangible evidence of change?
Well, I think the media certainly has a responsibility to keep the discussion going. And also, I think this is absolutely key, to not allow this to just be treated as a normal sporting competition in that way. Because it's something I've considered myself when we were talking about kind of whether media should boycott it. Now, talking to someone who works on the human rights side as regards Qatar, the response literally, they would love it if unquestioning media didn't go. And there is a bit of a kind of a dilemma there, because, you know, if players don't go, say, like a boycott in that regard isn't the same. If players don't go, it affects the staging of the event. If media don't go, it's still going to be shown all around the world. And what will happen if media don't go, then they get the chance to put out a completely sanitized version of what's actually happening. So from that perspective, I actually think it's important for me to go, but it can't be treated like a normal tournament because it isn't.
Do you think the average supporter cares, Miguel?
I think it's mixed, I have to say. As with a lot of these things, when people are actually confronted with the reality, it does often prompt a response from them. I suppose just because of the nature of it, and this is part of the whole sports washing process, it's how these issues are normalised. And you can see the same with Manchester City and all the... I mean, their chairman, Khaldun Al-Mubarak, he's the de facto prime minister of Abu Dhabi, which is a country that's been heavily involved in the war in Yemen. But just through the association with Manchester City, it's, you know, Abu Dhabi's presence in the West, say, is completely normalised. And from City, they've managed to build a construction empire in Manchester, all the rest of it. And this is how this process works, and why it's so effective, because it softens difficult questions. And that's kind of happened with Qatar as well, where for a decade we've had questions that haven't really gone anywhere and it's felt abstract. And it means kind of, I suppose, people just live with it. And there's an element of double think with it. But that changes, I suppose, if you're confronted with certain realities about the situation. And I suppose it's also why much more should be done now, I suppose, about the reality, say, that migrant workers are living with in Qatar.
It's important to stress at this stage that the Qatari authorities themselves say that they have introduced a lot of the changes that have been highlighted over the past decade. I take your point that the world of football has changed to a degree and has become more politicised in terms of the Black Lives Matter movement and the way we see players actively getting involved in that debate and taking the knee before matches. But racism is something that touches them individually and collectively on the pitch from when crowds are there or the social media that they suffer. What are the arguments that, you know, at a collective level, football should remain apolitical, FIFA and UEFA should remain apolitical, and that while there are all sorts of valid and justifiable questions to raise about how Qatar won this competition, human rights conditions in a country like Qatar, you could possibly raise the same questions in a different way about the United States in 6 years' time and the racial environment there?
Oh, yeah, you could. And to be honest, I mean, personally, I would encourage some of those questions. I suppose, without being too crude about it, there is almost a scale with these things. That is the reality. But what isn't the reality is that sport can be any way apolitical. That's never been the case. It's always been an absolute fantasy. The very organisation of sport, I mean, we can actually see it here. The initial split between the Northern Irish Federation and the FAI came from political concerns. So the very organisation of sport is political. It's never been able to be attacked. It's always been fully immersed in it. So, the idea we can just wave these things away is ludicrous, to be honest. And again, the choice sorry, the vote for Qatar to be staging a World Cup, that's similarly political. It's ultimately something political has happened, especially with the way Qatar is going to use it. So it's impossible to detach the two. And this is the reality the game has to confront. And belatedly, it is starting to confront that reality. And as you say, I mean, yes, it's obviously racism is something that touches players in a much more everyday sense and much more readily. And it's something that obviously will naturally energize them much more. But again, because I think this is important, and it's something that human rights groups like Fair Square have been pushing. The words of the UN report were basically, in Qatar, we do have a situation of racial inequality now, where there's structural racial discrimination against non-nationals of South Asian and sub-Saharan African nationalities. That's from a UN report, and we couldn't have a more basic example of what the taking the knee is meant to be about.
Despite the principled position taken by those Norwegian players during the week, Tom Hogley and Tromso, and perhaps a possible boycott by the Norwegian Federation in the autumn after an extraordinary general meeting, do you think ultimately, perhaps a bit cynically, Norway, if they qualify, will be playing in Qatar in 18 months' time?
Well, from talking to a few people around it, I think that's expected. And it could also be made more awkward by the fact that because they can't discuss it this week, a vote on it actually won't be taken until after, I think it's either the majority or all of the qualifiers have been played. So by then, Norway could well have qualified for their first World Cup in 24 years. And if that's the case, and if a world star like Erling Braut Haaland gets to play in his first World Cup, suddenly it becomes a lot more difficult to vote against going to Qatar. But I think that's also why people like Hogley, people in Tromso, and a lot of the clubs would say, the boycott is just kind of an extreme position as part of a wider dialogue here, which is about trying to force change in Qatar and going past dialogue, because dialogue hasn't really worked. I mean, you mentioned Qatar insist that that changes have been made. Well, you know, Amnesty, Human Rights Watch, Fair Square would all say that basically those were, I mean, to quote Amnesty here, reforms are often not properly implemented, and the concerns right now require urgent and concrete action. And it doesn't feel like that's going to go away in the next year, whether, you know, countries like Norway qualify or not. And this is going to stay on the agenda. I don't think it'll come to a boycott, but a boycott it's not black or white in that regard. A boycott isn't the only potential solution to this or response to this.
Well, in a week when many of us were just focusing on what was happening within the white lines of a football field, thanks indeed for raising the wider issues involved in holding the World Cup in Qatar, and for beginning that wider debate, Miguel. That's Miguel Delaney, chief football writer with The Independent in the UK. Miguel, thanks indeed for joining us.
Cheers. Thank you.
Taking stock on News Talk.
Thanks to Skillnet Ireland, driving business success through innovative training and upskilling.